speak. Never.
Are we good to go? I'll call this meeting to order. So we're at the, this is a meeting for the public hearing of our proposed tax rates and budget for the 26-27 school year. So we don't have anyone to ask any questions or ask for any explanations, so let's give it just a minute or two.
We can do that, and then we'll let Jake get started early,
sir.
And that way we can get the
board
meeting started early.
No one shows up in a couple of minutes, we'll adjourn the public hearing meeting, and then we'll go to our regular board.
That's good.
Water would be great, actually.
Ice or no ice?
I don't think they're cold, sorry.
Okay, there's cups of ice here.
I see that fire.
They said it's a Terry County tractor.
What's that?
I didn't know there was a Terry County tractor there.
I heard it was behind
Peter. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I saw.
It's our old location.
I walked through there for a while.
That's Nutrien location.
Bunch of stuff going on.
I didn't see it.
I got to see it from the gym.
Sat around there for a second. I texted
from over at King West. I
was just now looking at about a half
a dozen. No, a guy that lived over there.
It's a black.
Randy Tom.
Black. Well, yeah, I know it. It is.
Look,
it's on fire, which I guess is on.
You know, you see it.
I've been a couple times.
But it was old.
And it must not be connected to my watch either. It's usually just
no old Nutrien location. They said they got a Terry County tractor at it or something. I don't know that for sure. That's just what
they were about to put something in over.
Yeah, I thought Terry County only had that at Terry County and or at Brownfield and at Lovell.
So apparently on my little test that I took, I had to.
They've got pretty big, so they might have a location.
I thought that just had some
answers.
That's why it said it was incomplete.
I need to make my to-do list.
Oh, it's
that one.
You're going to just love it. That's why I had some 80s, because I'm like, I'm watching football and golf. And I kept going, and then it said, incomplete, incomplete. And I'm like, it is not incomplete. I had finished. I had suffered through this for hours.
That's the reason DEA made that one required, I guess.
Yeah, so now I've got to go back
if it wasn't.
And figure out how in the heck to go back and finish three or four of them that I didn't have 100 on.
Just it'll have that one deal because my first one I messed up, and it'll have like all your, I think it says modules.
I'll have to come screeching in
modules
before a deadline.
Click on the
go to modules on the left.
Yeah,
it's on
and
the
go
left.
To modules, and it'll have
the
all 29, the right? subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end,
that's what I'm giving
whatever
myself,
the test deal
really
is called,
first.
Just click
that's
on
right.
The test.
Is it 31st or 30th?
Yeah, so I'm putting 29. Make sure
80's good enough.
Obviously not.
Yeah, and then I finished it.
It's like, come on, see's good degrees.
I'm like, how can it be
really
incomplete?
Your information, you want to go over and get it.
Thank you for
the questions.
So if it's okay with y'all, I don't think we're going to have any
public
comments. So we'll need a motion and a second to adjourn this meeting, and we'll go to our special call meeting. Jess made the motion to adjourn.
I'll second.
We got a second. All in favor?
Who's
this meeting
Justin second.
Yeah, Justin second. I'm sorry. Meeting of the public hearing is adjourned. So I'll call our special meeting to order. And let's open up in a word of prayer, and then we'll get to our discussion and agenda items. Quentin, would you open us in
prayer? Sure. Dear Heavenly Father God, we just thank you so much for today, and just thank you for letting us serve this school and our community in this capacity, Father. Father, we just thank you for the way you've blessed us and the way you've blessed our school with talent and good kids and good families, Father. We're just so blessed. And Father, as we conduct the business of this school, Father, what you've blessed us with as far as assets, Father, just help us to manage those and to be good stewards of everything and be mindful of where it comes from, Father. We just thank you for all you do for us. We just love you so much and just ask you to just guide us through this meeting. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Quentin. So, we'll start with,
this is Jake Lawrence with Government Capital. His primary job responsibility is bonds, but I'll let him introduce himself, go over a little bit about what he does and what he offers. I'd like to, he can talk about how he gets paid and that type of stuff, but I'd like to bring him on as our advisor as we kind of start looking, working through the process of bonds.
Nice to meet you. Yes, sir.
Mrs. Berry, there enough for any of you think? I just didn't count.
Yes,
there's 10. There's 11.
Nice to meet you. I'm coming through. Yeah. Didn't get a chance to inform me today. Y'all got here too earlier. I was too lost.
I'm Quinn.
Hey, you got big hands.
Are you done?
Okay. Where are you from, Jake?
Sweetwater.
Okay.
Not too far. Okay, well, I appreciate you saying that, Mr. Larry. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
So my name is Jake Lawrence. I work for a company called Government Capital Securities Corporation. We've been around since, I think, 1995. And what I predominantly do is work for school districts, but our company also works for cities, counties, hospitals, water districts, you name it, as it relates to municipalities and their need for capital improvement projects and helping them navigate everything that's involved with issuing some types of financing, whether it be a bond issuance or there's a variety of other vehicles available for them. And I've been doing this for 10 years now. Like I mentioned, I'm from Sweetwater. I didn't always work in West Texas. I always wanted to. There's a guy that's covering this area, and he went to a different firm, so it opened it up for me. And so I've been out here doing it a little bit more since 2020. So there's a lot of things that we offer as a provider of guidance. It's really much providing a service to school boards or hospital boards or anybody as it relates to looking at y'all's finances themselves, the structuring and issuing of indebtedness. I do a deep dive into school districts' tax base strategies, you know, that y'all really have to deal with, which is what's the price of West Texas Intermediate on any given year, because it's going to influence your tax base. And then we have another sister company that's called Government Capital Corporation. They work nationwide. They do like equipment type of financings, the smaller things that you can do to do, you know, fleet of vehicles or computers or whatever else in that nature. And they're out of Southwick. But I pretty much I live in Dallas because I'm about to get married and don't like. She has a really great job, and she's originally from north of Dallas in a small town called Whitesboro. But I still pretty much come out here and stay at my parents' house because I never downsized. Instead of staying in hotels all the time. But if not, I'm up in Amarillo and Lubbock all the way, covering up to the top there, down to a little bit south of San Angelo, and all the way out to El Paso. So a lot of time in the car. But you know, a lot of my job is looking at the financing things, how to make school districts better off. I know that the state has done a lot of things over the last couple of years that don't really help with school funding. And also feel like rural schools, like where I'm from as well, you know, they get overlooked from the state. And I think I take a lot of pride in helping those districts. That's who we work for, is mostly rural communities and rural towns, to help them get what they need in terms of their funding and, you know, taking advantage of every type of situation that you could possibly think of. So that's just kind of a brief history of what I do. And y'all can go through this. As, you know, I've just put together essentially just a basic initial analysis of y'all school district's tax base and what y'all are looking at, how you compare to some folks around you. I'm not making any assumptions. You know, you can tell me this is not what you want to see or want to see something different, and y'all can interrupt me as many times I go through it. But is there anything before I get started y'all have questions about, kind of what we do or myself? Okay. All right. So, like Mr. Lowry said, the big thing that every school district wants to look at is, okay, especially what y'all are, you know, a property wealthy, recapture school district that does not get a lot of help out of your budget in terms of the funding from the state for how much y'all have to spend or send back, right? So you'll see that every school district that's pretty much west of Abilene that has any oil and gas or they have wind farms or something of that nature, a big taxpayer, they take advantage of that by issuing bonds. Now, there's a couple versions of bonds that school districts look for. I mean, of course, they can build new facilities, but what I've been doing a lot lately and what I've done recently with Borden County, worked for them, and another school on the top of the panhandle with some oil and gas called Kelton, they're issuing, now they have their facilities all where they kind of want to be, they are now doing kind of a maintenance bond so that they're taking everything they can out of their budget. That's not salaries, so anything related to general maintenance, equipment, technology, whatever. And they call bond elections for like $3, $5, $6 million, whatever they kind of need, and they pay it off after 3 to 5 years, depending on how aggressive they want to be on that repayment schedule. Now, of course, with these school districts, they have moving tax bases like y'all do, and with oil and gas prices. So we look at that and put that together. But the number one thing that for each school district can do is their assessed valuation, the total taxable value, which you're able to support in indebtedness comes from that assessed valuation number. So the bigger that number is, the better or more likelihood you're going to issue bonds and pay them back faster. I use the example, my rivals were Snyder and Abilene Wiley, and I always wanted to know why they had nicer facilities than us. It's because they had four times the tax base. Snyder's got all the oil and gas, or a good chunk of it. Abilene Wiley's got, you know, half of Abilene and the southern part of Abilene with a lot of businesses and nice homes. Sweetwater didn't have any of those things. So it was, our facilities were not always as nice as theirs was, but it kind of shows you that those tax bases can support issuing a larger chunk of bonds, which you'll see in this area comparison. What I've taken a notice is that y'all, of course, you know, fluctuate quite a bit, just depending on where that price of WTI is on any given year. I will say y'all only dropping 14% from what I've seen is lower than what most school districts that have a predominantly oil and gas base, is that you're seeing upwards of 20 to 25% and from just 1 year from last year to this year. And how that works is, you know, the CADs go out there and they pretty much appraise it on January 1, and whatever the price is at that point in time, that's what your valuation comes in at. So there's still, which that kind of shows me that they were still doing a lot of production on those wells, at least in y'all's district, compared to some of the ones I work for. I mean, with Glasscock County, they went from $9 billion to $6 billion in 1 year. And they're a little bit more gas than petroleum. But, you know, you can see how that kind of works there. Other than that, it just kind of shows you how the INS and the M&O tax rate have changed. Your ADA is very consistent, which is nice. You're able to budget off of that stuff. Of course, the state taking control of the M&O tax rate and your INS being the same over the last couple of years, too. Next page is just a visual of that, just so it's easier to kind of see how that has worked over the years. So you can see how much else has jumped with Martin County, you know, carrying a lot of it. And, of course, the tax rate going down at the same time, too. So I usually use this as when I do public presentations talking about this so they can visualize what a school district's funding is made up of based upon that tax base number. Okay, the area school comparisons. So I just picked the ones that are kind of just around you, some that are in similar sizes, of course, are preferred when you look at this. But also, you want to see how some of these tax bases, like I mentioned, you know, how are school districts able to afford what they've been able to afford in their facilities or whatever else. This is 2025 values. So I know that 2026 values just came out last month, but they haven't been all posted onto a database from all the appraisal districts yet. They're still probably going through some other parts of that. That usually starts showing up about October. So this is 2025 values. So I bet Grady had gone down unless there's just been a higher production level. I know Sands did. I work for Sands as well. I know that's probably a bad thing. Y'all rivals, right? I think because I went over there and told them I was coming to visit y'all, and they said boo. But they're good folks too. Their values, I think, came in about $2.7 billion as well. They were as high as 4.9 in the years past. So I imagine everybody else that has exposure has gone down. But this is just 2025 last year's value. So you can take a look at this and notice that. I'm trying to think if there's a good example, like with Glasscock. And y'all's values are this year, though. I did change it to the 2026 values of the $4.62 billion. Like a good example would be that if you look at Glasscock County and Klondike, well, what that those two valuations kind of show with $9 billion versus $4.5 billion is that if y'all were to call for the same bond election or the same dollar amount that went over the same term, it would cost them half as much of a tax increase as it would for y'all because they're able to double the values. That's just the short of it when you see that number. And because there's no state funding really that is affected for school districts that have these types of tax bases, it's strictly just coming from the industry there too. So it gives you a little bit of an idea. Or, you know, if y'all called for the same, the other way you could look at it too is if y'all called for a bond of the same tax rate, they could afford double what y'all could. If it was both like a 5 or a 10 cent increase, they could get double the amount of project fund. Not now, because they're down to $6 billion, but in this example I'm showing you. The other part I always take note of is the maintenance and operations tax rate. So those are all different because it depends on, you know, the two main functions of every school, or three main functions. Your average daily attendance, your tax base, and the weighted average daily attendance. And there's a million other inputs in the funding formula from the state, but those are the three that influence more than anything else. And the state kind of determines how much you're able to set your tax rate at. They send you a maximum compressed tax rate. The board gets to vote up to 5 additional pennies unless they've had what's called a TRE or a voter evader is what they're called now. And y'all have. So y'all went out for the maximum amount of maintenance and operation funding as you could possibly get. And that's a good thing because I've had to do a lot of those elections, and they're very difficult too. But you're trying to maximize what you can out of what the golden pennies are and the copper pennies. And we'll talk. You like to talk about that?
You
on
can,
that slide too.
Yeah.
Okay. Because the golden copper pennies, what they're called, is that there's a total of 8 golden pennies. You get to set 5 without an election. We all had the election, so you get to set an additional 3 golden pennies. And then there's another additional 9 copper pennies. Well, they're not funded the same way on how they're levied. Now, for a taxpayer, they're the exact same. They don't notice a difference. But the state now has some tweaking that they can do where the 8 golden pennies are not subject to recapture, but the 9 copper pennies are subject to it, meaning that whatever revenue you're going to see here in a little bit that's brought in, you don't get to keep the majority of it. So what you'll see is most school districts, I'm not saying that y'all need to do or not because that'll be a board decision, but depending on if you want to set those copper pennies on how much additional funding you get based upon that additional levy. Okay. Other parts over here on the right, I show the bond amounts passed since 2000. I started 2000. I don't have to get that. Essentially, school districts weren't necessarily having to call bonds prior to 2005 most of the time. Schools were funded in a completely different way. State came in and did a compression round back then. They were at $1.50. Total taxable tax rate that they could set. Every school district could set up to $1.50, and maybe they only needed $1.40 to operate, so they would set aside whatever 10 cents generated off of that tax rate and tax base. They would set it aside year over year and pay as you go. State got rid of that. They saw fund balances getting too big across the state. I mean, there's just bad actors out there, and so they hammered it down to $1.04, and then it was at $1.04 forever until 2018 when they started compressing it back down twice, and now we're down in the low 70s range or mid 60s, depending where your tax rate is. So these bond amounts, of course, the bigger amounts that you can see associated with them are going to fall in line with the tax bases that support them. So you'll notice that these are ranked in order of the highest tax or bond tax rate, which is the INS, the interest and sinking tax rate. So you have Ira O'Donnell, Sands is at 26, and then Mesa 22, Grady 10, Borden 9, Glasscock 7, Klondike 5. The smaller tax bases like O'Donnell and Ira, they need to generate as much as they possibly can to make their bond payments because their tax bases, especially with Ira's, you know, they're mostly just wind farm. That's it. And so those things depreciate all the time. So you got to set your bond payments to it. And so they've also, those two schools have issued the least amount of bond issuances because of that tax base being a mitigating factor. You can only go up to 50 cents when you call and pass an election. There's a test from the Attorney General's office that states, okay, if we go look at your last year's certified values and we look at the maximum debt service of this potential bond sale you're going to have, can 50 cents of levy make that bond payment? And then if it does, the AG says you can issue it. If you can't, then they won't let you issue it up to that amount. The extreme example is, I'll use the example of Dallas ISD passed a $4 billion bond, the biggest bond in history of the state of Texas. but they can't afford to sell $4 billion right now. So they're just going to sell it as their tax base grows or make issuances and, you know, old debt falls off. They'll just keep, they're going to keep it at 50 cents forever. So I, you know, I don't plan on living in Dallas for very much longer, especially with it being at 50 cents, because that is an extremely higher level and for the cost of living purposes there. But that's just, you know, what happens there. So y'all are at the lower end, you know, going up to 50 as high as you can go. I know, like with Sands, I'll use that example real quick. You know, their tax base was originally at $4.9 billion, was the highest it got when they passed the bond in November of 2023. So what we kind of did with them was we understood. I just talked to the board. I said, your tax base is going to drop at some point. We don't know when. I mean, how the conversations with their board let me know a little bit more about how much production was going on in the oil and gas market. You know, they knew, hey, this one's starting up. There's some new pockets of shale that they're drilling into over here. It's good over here. It's starting to slow down here. And I just said, okay, if we look at that, what tax increase would you want to tell your community for an $85 million bond? Because you honestly, at $4.8 billion, you know, pay on an $85 million bond paid off over 30 years, they would only need 12 and a half cents to service their debt. But we wanted to come through and have a hedge against that market fluctuation of your oil and gas values, right? So what they decided to do is the board felt the most comfortable with, and it's just a board decision because y'all live out here. They wanted to say, we'll go out for 26 cents. We'll tell them it's 26 cents. We're going to set it at 26 cents. We're going to over-collect more than double than what we need so that we build up a high enough INS fund balance that you have, you know, if it starts bottoming out, they don't need to go above 26 cents. And what that number was for them is that they were at $4.8 billion, and I said, okay, if your values ever got to $2 billion, you would need to levy higher than 26 cents. But they're not going to have to because now they've collected so much, they have over 2 years' worth of payment set aside. So that they're always going to keep it at 26 cents so that they're accelerating the repayment of that debt faster. So that they're able to do two things. Pay it down quicker, save interest expense there, but also hedge against when the market's starting to bottoming out on certain years, that they're able to survive that without ever having to increase their tax rate at all. So it's been at 26 cents there. Trying to think what else. Any questions on that?
Is that Glasscock County, it says that most recent was 2014? Was that 2024? Or are they doing all their work?
Oh, excuse me. I don't know why I put 2014. I worked Glasscock Bonds. It was 2024.
Okay. Yeah,
sorry.
Let's say they're spending a lot of money somehow.
Yeah, Mallet. that board, they did a $40 million bond in 2024. I guess I'll fat finger that. If I'm looking at the other ones, those other ones are correct. I can confirm them. Just to check that one. Yeah. Borden, you know, built their school back in 2009, or they passed the bond in 2009, paid it off in 2022, and then just did another small issuance of a $6 million bond just recently in 2025. Okay. Any questions? Any others? Now, this is a very crude, like, not crude, it's not the right word. It's a simplified version of what I look at for every school district. You know, there's a lot more that I would need to get into. And speaking with both of y'all's appraisers for the counties that y'all are in, but you can see the total taxable value column. You know, this is always a conversation I have with board. What do you feel like is the most comfortable version of that, of how y'all would feel about the oil and gas market? Because that's going to be 98%, 99% of your tax base, right? I just said, hey, we're going to level it down at $4.5 billion for this one example. I think I can find out more information after to really, you know, figure out, hey, how much is going on for this year of 2026. They've had a good year. I mean, ever since the international conflict started in into February, you know, my brother works in this business too, in oil and gas, and he's like, yeah, they're blowing and going still all over the place. So it should be a good year, but that's not going to matter until what it looks like in January of next year when the appraisers go out there and appraise. Not always the best deal, because when they're probably really happy when the price per barrel was over 100, but if it gets down to 50, there's some things in place where, you know, you wouldn't get to take on that whole valuation. They, you know, off some of the sales stuff, they do get to include that, but at least For some parts of that valuation, it will change depending on where that price is at that point in time. Okay, so now we're looking at your existing debt service. I have this struck through with your current debt service payments because there is a way to pay off your bond in 45 days if you decide to do it. You have to do that at a board meeting, so 45 days from when you would pass a resolution that would state that you have the intent to what's called defease your outstanding debt. These bonds were sold as what's called non-callable bonds, meaning that there is you can't technically prepay without having to pay for some accrued interest, but there is a way to do it. It's called an economic defeasance. Is that it? Property wealthy schools do this all the time. Is that if they build up their fund balance and they got it to a certain value where they felt good and they have enough to want to go ahead and use it towards paying it off, what you do is you do a calculation that's based upon, hey, if we decide to pay off our bondholders on this exact date, whatever that date is, you know, how much do we need to pay? We need to pay our full principal, but what is the interest calculation that we need to owe up into what's called their maturity schedule? So these bonds mature in 27, 28, and 29. Each of those principal amounts have interest calculations to when those payments are, so we do a calculation based upon that. But also, you're able to earn some money, so you don't have to pay the full interest. What you do is you get to save some interest expense. Now, this interest rate was so low, I get why I did non-callable. I did a lot of non-callable bonds back in 2020 and 2021. But I knew that you could go ahead and pay it off because the interest expense was less than 1% on a lot of these bonds that we were selling that were less than 10 years. So what you do is you take, in y'all's example, y'all need a little over $3 million, I believe. Yeah, $3,370,000 of outstanding principal. And there's about, I think there's $70,000 or something of interest remaining. You don't need to pay the full $3,370,000 plus the $70,000. It's probably going to be about half, where it's about $40,000 of interest that you can use. Because what you're going to do with those funds is you're going to take it and set it aside and give it to a third party. And that third party is a paying agent. And what their job is that they're going to take those funds and you're going to say, hey, we're done with it. Get it off our books. It's now your responsibility to pay these bondholders off when the time comes. But also take our money and put it into treasury bills or T-bills so that it can earn a little bit of money off of what that calculation is to get to that point. They're called state and local government securities. So you do have to pay some accrued interest, which I think is about half of what's remaining, but you'll also not have to pay the additional $40,000. So it's not a huge amount because y'all did it on a short term and it's a low interest rate, but in today's world, it's a little bit higher now. So there's a lot of savings on newer issuances when you do this, but it allows y'all to not have, you'll save $40,000. But that's the way you get it done is that, yes, these bondholders will not be paid off until those payment dates are due to them, but you can get it off your books and save a little bit of interest expense off of that by going ahead and doing this defeasance. It's a little bit more of there's a lot of red tape involved. You have to, work with somebody like a financial advisor, a bond counsel, a verification agent, and a paying agent, and an underwriter. So there's a lot of things I'm skipping over because that would be a little too long of a conversation for maybe this, but there's a way you can get it done. It just allows you to pay it off, and it's not your responsibility anymore. You're just giving it to somebody else, and so that now you're not having to look at this payment every year because it's now been paid off. So it's a way to do that. So I'm assuming in this example, like this for just this one example, I'm assuming that's something that y'all would be interested in doing because y'all currently have a fund balance of $5,646,000, right? Is that the correct number?
Just on that INS. I think it's
INS only.
Yes.
Yeah. And that may be at the end of this year. Right now, there was about 3.7, maybe.
Okay. So, yeah, then I need to change that then a little bit. I'll make a reminder on that number. Because I was thinking, are you saying at the end of this year when the audit comes out, or the balance right now?
The balance right now is like 5 point something.
Okay, it is. So it's probably close to that 5.6. Yeah. If the INS only.
Yes, that does help. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so for this conversation, it'll still play for what I'm kind of going to break down here. So this is an example of if y'all wanted to do, I don't know, we just picked the number $10 million. If you kept your tax rate the exact same, that's usually kind of a starting point I do with school boards. Here's what it would be if you did a net zero bond election, how much would that produce? Depending on the assumptions I'm making about your tax base, how much could you get into your project fund? So in this version, if you did a five-year bond and kept your tax rate the exact same, you could generate $10 million of project need. So using that for whatever you felt like you would want to do. You know, like a Borden County example where you're doing a lot of maintenance stuff, or, you know, if you wanted to build some type of new facility of some sort, whatever else they'll have out here that needs to be done, or a combination of the two. I'm trying to think. There's only a few things. Yeah, if you want to be like Wink Loving out there, and they build like a swimming pool, you know, that has to be a separate ballot item. Or if you did anything technology related, like computers, not necessarily like for the purpose of a facility, but for something that depreciates so fast, they got to be separate ballot items. But most, for the most thing, everything can be general renovation type, all in one proposition. With Kelton's recently one that we did in May, they had to do three props. They did a general proposition, a technology proposition, and then if you have teacher housing, that's got to be a separate proposition too. So I know, like when Borden's example, that was a part of theirs, and they have like 50 schoolhouses or something crazy like that. So they have to pretty much address that all the time, every time they do a bond. So in this example, you pay it back over 5 years. And that seems like if anything good, if your values ever start going back up, you can start accelerating that payment more. Or you can set the tax rate of whatever you want. The school board does still have the full authority to levy whatever INS tax rate that y'all see fit. The M&O, though, no, you don't really get much of a say in that one, because that's the state's job now compared to years past. But at least for the INS, you can accelerate that debt payment by setting it higher like we were doing in Sands. Or you can set it lower if your values ever increase, too. But that's the minimum INS minimum debt service requirement to make those payments right there off of that amount. And that generates about $10 million. Trying to think what else. The additional state aid for homestead exemption, I always just have that in there because for some places it makes a huge difference. But, you know, for places out here, it's not, it's inconsequential. But that's state money that every school district receives if they had a bond outstanding when the state has come in and increased the homestead exemptions. So it used to be at 25, it used to be at 15, then it was 25, then it was 40, then it was 100, and now it's 140,000 of homestead exemption, and the 65 and older went from 110 to 200,000. Doesn't make a big difference out here, but if you go to like Lubbock Cooper, where there's a bunch of homes, that's a significant portion of their tax base, and that's part of their tax base that they're no longer allowed to tax anymore because of this exemption. So if they had bonds outstanding at that point in time, the state had to come in and make you what's called held harmless to service your debt issuances, because sometimes some of those schools that have passed bonds, they would lose 10% of their tax base and they'd have to levy a higher tax rate than what they told the community. Well, the state comes in and mitigates what that would potentially be to go down that path. So that's just how that works for y'all. Y'all receive less than $2,000, right? So it's not a big portion of coming from the state to help make your bond payments. Those payments can only be used to pay debt service as well. Same thing with INS. I did a 95% collection factor. Oil and gas is always tricky. Some places they pay pretty fast, and some places they kind of slow play a little bit too, where the collection percentage may be in the lower 90s for the total tax collections that you expect to receive every January and February. So we can address that as needed as well. If you pay this off and call a $10 million bond, and if you set your INS tax rate this year at 0.0522, you should have $4,514,710 in your fund balance after January, February next year. So what you can do with that is a couple things. Make a huge payment immediately off of a new bond issuance, or, you know, also save some in there for rainy day, essentially, that, you know, when the, if your values ever start dropping, that you're able to kind of use some of those funds too. But it'll add it back to it after this year if you set it at that tax rate. The other example, if you just doubled, like if you wanted to go for an election and increase it by 5 additional cents, you could generate $20 million, simple math off of the assumptions I made about your tax base. That would move you to a little over 10 cents, not quite 11. And then I'd show what the average home value impact is for the homes in y'all's community. I understand there's a lot of other things to consider, because there's not a ton that are paying in taxes anyway. Like, if your value, if you, this is your homestead, which we can go ahead and get to. I just want to show you two examples, but this is the homestead version. Not a huge, because I know a lot of people take more into consideration, you know, if they have a local business, or if they have mineral rights that they have to pay taxes on, or if they have ag land. They want to know what that tax impact is going to be, more so than their homes, because a lot of the time, you know, if you had a home that's not even worth $140,000, they pay zero taxes, budget or bond, to the school district anyway. The average market in the, is $166,185. The median value is $151,000. So it just kind of shows those two examples of homes within y'all's community of what that would mean. So if you did a $10 million election, you wouldn't see an increase in their taxes, because you're just levying the same tax rate as you have been. But if you did a bigger bond, you could show what that would mean for annual increases. So it's just the total annual of additional that they would have to pay for taxes themselves. Now, for the oil and gas companies, we can kind of that depends on those valuations, because they're in the hundreds of millions of dollars. But I just want to show you, at least for the people that live out here, what that would mean on just on their home, on their homesteads. 65 and older, there is no effect, as long as you don't make significant improvements to that homestead. So if you're 65, you're frozen, in the sense that you're frozen at a dollar figure. So if anybody's 65 and older and their homestead's over 200,000, they may have to pay a little, like they won't have to pay anything if on a new issuance. But even if their homes are at 200,000 or less, they pay zero taxes to the school on their homestead only, for life, as long as they live within that house and don't make a major improvement. Like the example I use is, if I turn 65 and I build a $200,000 house, whatever I'm paying in taxes to the school that year, it's frozen at that, on that year. It can always go down, it can never go up. But it stops me, they stop the loophole of, okay, when I'm 66, I'm building a $2 million house right behind it. Still part of the same property. Now, can't do that, right? So they will reassess that new addition, and that'll be frozen at a different level at that point. So what a lot of folks saw from 65 and older perspective is that they saw it go down when the homestead exemption went into effect last year from 110,000 to 200. Okay, this is the ag portion. Now, I bet this is wrong. I know it's not wrong. It's just dated information. The comptroller doesn't have any of your 2025 values. The 2026 ones are being figured out currently a little bit. But this 2024's values that were submitted by Martin CAD to the comptroller, and the average value per acre for the five types of ag subcategories that y'all have, so barren, native pasture, dry crop, improved pasture, and irrigated. You can see the average value per acre in 2024. I would update this, of course, and get the information for 2026, but on the comptroller's website, they don't have it for some reason for this past year. But you can see what this was a 5 cent election on if you have the number of acres. So you can go on the higher end, like if you had a full section of irrigated land, if you had a 5 cent bond, for which would essentially equate up to that $20 million number, they would be expected to pay an additional $24.22 a year total for that full section off of 2024 values. I know it's probably higher, I just drove all last week through the panhandle, and it's like a failed season for them up there for sure. But down here, y'all have some pretty good irrigated stuff going on, so I don't know how. I bet it's maybe probably higher on an average value per acre for irrigated, but we can adjust it as time goes on. Should y'all ever decide to call an election. I forgot to mention, there's two times to call an election. You can call it for a November or a May. It just depends. I would say in some communities it makes a big difference, in others it doesn't. But just the two options that you have for you ever want to do that. Okay, before I get into the tax rate, this is the M&O. Now, I'll just continue the budget real quick. Any questions y'all have for me before that? Okay, so this is a model that I put together. It's a shorthand model. Like, there's a lot more inputs that can come into it, but it's always very, very, very close to the accurate information. So what this is a breakdown of the tax pennies the board can levy up to on the maintenance and operations side, so your budget. The state sends you, or every school district, a maximum compressed tax rate. There's a floor. Like, the floor right now is probably Grady at 65 cents. And should we have some... What the state does is they look across the state, how much economic development, how much should we grow as a state, and then they figure out, okay, what can we lower the school, all school districts' tax rate to, depending on a number of factors. So what y'all saw back in 2018, y'all were at $1.04, and then over time it's gone and been chopped down because of this compression that the state has instituted in all school districts. For y'all's sake, it doesn't make a huge difference because y'all are still 100% locally funded, meaning that your current tax base funds your school. For a lot of schools, that's not the case. It's definitely switched a little bit more where the state wasn't funding a lot of them, but now it's closer to 50-50 on maybe a little less than that. But I know they're using your tax dollars to fund those other schools. It goes to them, and then that's what they're using that money. You know, that's not everything, but that they use that recapture money for, but it is a part of it. Okay, so we have your taxable value, your weighted average daily attendance, so... They know, y'all know what that part or that is. So average day attendance is how you get funded based upon the number of kids that y'all have showing up on any given day. Well, the weighted part is maybe they're in CTE programs, maybe they're English second language, maybe they're free and reduced lunch. The state gives you more money for those kids that are designated by the state in that way. So your weighted average day attendance affects these pennies only. All right, so you have these eight golden pennies. You're going to levy those. Every property wealthy school district does if you pass the VATER or a TRE. That generates $3,696,251. Not subject to recapture at all. But these copper pennies are. And the tax rate there is, I show 5 cents. Yeah. You can go up to 9. But I believe y'all's is 5. If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. You can go all the way up to an additional 9 copper pennies, but y'all don't go that far. Y'all go to 5. 0583, and that brings in almost another additional $3 million off of those pennies. However,
95% recap.
You get to, yeah, only keep $100,000. It just depends on every school board's.
Go ahead.
So if we, are we obligated take those copper pennies, or could we get those out of the budget? I mean, that's not very efficient for our taxpayers.
Right. That's the conversation I was going to have. That's one that you're having to make here in a couple of minutes. You can do it. You can always go down. But how is the budget? Can we withstand a $100,000 loss, $123,000 loss that y'all had probably already had budgeted before when y'all set y'all's budget this year? If you can, I would recommend, in my opinion, all the property wealthy school districts I work for don't levy the copper pennies for that reason. But I just met y'all and had an in-depth conversation with y'all's perspectives and what y'all prefer, but I just know that where I've been.
What would it be better to wait until we maybe pass one of them bonds, put that 5 cents into the bond tax rate.
You can, if you wanted to move. Yeah. So right now you're setting 5 cents. You're setting an additional 5 copper pennies. You could set it this year, hit the recapture. But then, if you call a bond election, you could technically move those bond or those copper pennies to a bond, and it'd still be a net zero total tax rate increase because you're dropping on the MNO5. You're keeping your 5 after your bond's paid off, and you're adding that 5 back here. The total tax rate stays the same, which would mean that y'all would stay at 78 cents. And then you could afford a larger bond or a shorter term bond, just depending on what y'all preferred.
You're saying use the copper pennies to pay into the bond?
Like right now, where we're sitting, we're making a decision right now on a budget that we've kind of already got planned.
Right.
But coming into the end of this year, May, June, July, August, taking a look, potentially in May is what we talked about. If we could figure out what we wanted bond wise, how we need to allocate that, take those copper pennies at that point in time, in November, this time next year, and move them over at that point in time, then you can pass that bond, show your taxpayers that you're you know, you could even lower, maybe, you know, drop a penny or two, move over to 3 to 5, you know, and you get a feel for what they're going to do. From that point, you've got it on the INS side, and then moving forward, potentially pay things off early, potentially, you know, do more things, just knowing that someday the windfall is going to drop out of the oil industry and we're not going to have that, but at least we've done some things to maximize it at that point in time. I think it might be harder to get back if you...
If we turned it down now and then tried to get it back next year, that's going to be a hard sell.
It could be.
Right. So the other part of it is, too, is that if you lower it, you cannot increase it back up ever again on the M&O side. That's this other part. Is that y'all went out for almost the full amount of pennies in that TRE y'all did in 2018. You can see y'all went from $1.04 to $1.17, so you went for the full amount back then. But if you ever start dropping, which y'all have started to drop it, you cannot go back up unless you call for another voter-approved tax rate election, which is just a election that states, hey, if y'all remember from 2018, that we're going to increase our maintenance and operation revenues. Whatever you set now, like if you were to keep it there right now, you could essentially call for a bond of the 10-cent version of $20 million over 5 years, and it'd be a net zero on everybody else. But you're not using those copper pennies to pay it. You're just getting rid of the copper pennies and moving it to the INS side should the election pass. But it's got to pass in May because that's the last time that you would have the opportunity to have a new bond before you set your tax rate a year from now. Right? If it doesn't pass, well, then you're setting a 0 cent INS tax rate, and then you've got to make a decision on what to do with those copper pennies at that point if you levy them this month. I just wanted to bring it to your attention. Not that you're not. It's up to y'all. Y'all got to talk through it. I'm figuring out what y'all prefer on any of those options. I would recommend, though, just like I said, this is my opinion. This is not a really good use because for your taxpayers, they don't know that money's leaving. They just see it as an additional 5 cents that they're being levied upon their total tax rate. But I always use the example when these school districts, like why schools should do bonds or do bonds to buy school buses or whatever else. You know, y'all get to keep 20 cents of every dollar, 30 cents. I'm not exactly sure, but every dollar that you generate off of this tax base for your budget, you're keeping a fraction of it anyway, because how much goes back to recapture. But you get to keep 100% of your bond dollars. So what a lot of schools do is that they'll have a bond election for school buses, because everybody needs school buses, but they can also turn around and sell them to neighboring schools for a discount, maybe. And then you get to take that and put it into your fund balance, like general fund.
It's
not. It sounds like, okay, I'm going to say this word. It sounds like...
it's called business.
Tax evasion or something. I used to call it money laundering. I was like, it's not that. It sounds like that, but it's not. You're legally allowed to do that. And that's what
I believe my grandmother would say.
Probably allowed these school districts to do that for that purpose. Because, you know, it's nice to have, you know, money coming in of a fund balance that's getting taken away from the state, right? So that's what a lot of schools will do. And so it's 100% legal. It's been legal forever. And the AG knows it. They approve it. Because every time you have an election, you have to go through a really long process of approval from the state's perspective. And they know you can do it. They haven't stopped that one yet, I guess, but I don't know why they would.
Timing-wise, to have a bond election in May, what does our timing look like backing up to now where we're only 6.5 months away from that?
If you want to do a May election, the deadline to call is the middle of February. It's like February 14th, 15th, 16th, somewhere right in there. At that point, the board would need to decide the scope of the bond election and the amount. Those are the two things that get locked in, essentially. And then, you know, also having a bond counsel, you have to get an attorney that works with me. And we'll work with an underwriter as well on how to actually sell the bonds to the investors. And that's really the main thing, is kind of figuring out what you want to do.
And you named off about four different people, but you are all those. your
I'm
firm,
not. I'm
your
one.
Firm has all these people.
I work with a lot of them. I can give recommendations, or if y'all ever wanted to interview certain ones, you don't necessarily have to. A lot of the times, it's really about that. I get asked a ton. Who have you worked with? Who do you prefer? And I just can send y'all, you know, the administration or the board a list, and then get on the phone and just talk to them. And I can tell you about. I work with, you know, 6-7 different bond councils, 6-7 different underwriters, and what's the other one? Underwriters, bond council. Those are the main ones to get started. Oh, then the architects, if y'all are doing, you know, the school trying to build something, or construction management firms, all that. I mean, I just work with a bunch that are really out here in West Texas for the most part. And if they make the effort to come out here or whatever else that they care about, schools like I do, and will make the effort to travel for y'all. So I know a bunch of them. But I know that Mr. Lauer probably, you know, he's got a lot of contacts in this, you know, business world too, so Mrs. Berry, that they can call on and ask and see who they've worked with too, and how their experience was with either of these firms. But they don't cost anything. The only one that does is maybe bond counsel. I don't know how lawyers get away with this, but you know, I'm always like, if this bond doesn't pass, I should not get paid. I didn't do my job, right? That's how we get how we're funded, is that if you have a transaction, either with a maintenance and operation type of financing or a bond election that passes and we sell the bonds, we're funded based upon what's called a premium sale during the bond election phase. It doesn't come out of the project fund. It comes out of the way you sell the debt. And so to underwriters, you know, at-risk employment, just like we are in that, but bond councils have now changed where I think they're having to do a lot more, maybe, but they have to do all the pre-election work, which is a lot, but they've now started to feel like if a bond fails, they're going to invoice the school district for the pre-bond election work or pre-election. My pre-election services are free, in the sense that if it doesn't pass.
You're just making money off of selling the bonds.
Right. That's it. Just, I can show you an example. I mean, I just got done selling a bunch of, like, I have to show you, I have to have a screen to do it, but I just got done selling all the May elections that had just passed.
Yeah.
And it's just based upon that. And it's where you sell a bond. You can sell a bond at a premium or a discount. Well, you want to generate some additional funds. Like, if you want to call a $10 million bond, you don't want to back out $100,000 to pay all these individuals, and you only get $9,900,000. We can sell it in a way that you finance the fees incorporating into it, which is, it's different than how you would see that at a bank when you kind of finance the fees there, but it works the same way on how you get funded there.
So, on this handout that we got, this fee structure, it's tiered, how much you're going to make depending on, is that how much the bond is passed for, or how's that work?
Right, so this one is, there's the way that we kind of do it is based upon this schedule, is like once you start getting, if you call for a much larger bond, I'm going to bring a different schedule. This is kind of like when you look at bonds that are $25 million less, really. Because I didn't know what y'all wanted to do. Usually it's kind of where I start right there, and then it's based upon a structure of, you know, if you pass a $1 million bond, our fee is $15,000. That's it. And then what the next one is like it's what, two to, is it on? Do y'all have it in front of you?
I've got it.
I can walk through it. Yeah, it's like, okay, so then if you call a bond that's $3 million, the first, you know, $15,000 plus $12.50 for $1,000 of bonds, because bonds are sold at these increments. So, yeah, thanks for this.
I saw it a second ago. Okay. Now I can't.
Let's do the $10 million. $62,000. You eat off for $5 million.
Yeah, I saw it.
So, like, the sports change, the superintendents change. And I get hired at places where a superintendent I used to work for moved to a different school or something of that nature. And so we all are kind of under the understanding that you just give us, with technically 30 days notice, it's into the contract, and you don't owe us anything for that. We would take over, like, there's a couple other things that we do with continued disclosure requirements. It's in the contract. You have to tell everybody who owns your bond debt how your financials are each year. So instead of them having to call the school and pepper questions, because these people that buy these bonds sell them day in, day out if they want to. They want to know if your credit rating has changed or if your finances are in a bad spot. You know, what's this bond worth? And, you know, there's requirements to submit that information. So we compile it all for y'all and put it into a database called EMMA, so that those investors can look at that. So we take that over. We also monitor what's called arbitrage. That is when you take receipt of bonds and your INS tax rate, but it works for both. When you take receipt of bonds, you get to go put it into the bank. Why? Because you can't spend it all at once, right? So that gets to generate interest. Well, there's a limit to what you can earn called the arbitrage yield. And if you earn more than that, and you don't spend all your bond proceeds in 3 years, the IRS could come in and say, they do it just like your normal taxes. Do you owe us or not? And then if they ask you that question, and you're like, I don't know. Well, then they're going to do an investigation, and you don't want that. So we do the arbitrage annually to monitor, because after 5 years is when you're supposed to pay the IRS if you earn too much. You can't profit off of an issuance, because what municipalities receive are what's called tax-exempt interest rates, and that's lower than what mean you can get as a business owner, or car loan, or mortgage.
But you can't make money off
of it. These bonds are charged 2%, but right now we can invest it at like 3%. Yeah, you can't. You can do it, but only up to 3 years, so long as you spend that money within 3 years. It also works on the INS revenues too. There's another calculation based upon how much you can earn on that money, on y'all's $5 million that y'all have right now as well. So y'all's 5-year due date is probably this year. And I don't know, when you issued the bond from 2021? It's technically out. Was it a May election, November election?
It was November, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, because they started that next summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
22. Yeah, that arbitrage is come and due, so we would definitely want. How big was the bond? Eight million?
Six or eight, nine.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Okay, you're kind of underneath. When it's a bond of that size, the IRS really doesn't care. They're trying to stop the big issuers of the world, because who's paying that interest? It's the federal government. So they want to stop those folks for sure. When you're kind of underneath a certain threshold, they kind of, it's not worth their time. A lot of the time, it's like the de minimis rule. So I think y'all are good.
Okay. So what do y'all want to? What are y'all thinking?
I'm good with it.
I think
it'd help.
Good thing.
I think it'd help.
Yeah.
With the advice on how to do some of these deals.
Any more questions for Jay before we
figure it out?
Yeah, I'm happy. I can leave too if y'all want to talk in private. Do that.
What's your recommendation?
My recommendation is, I think we go on board. I visited with two board members. I mean, two superintendents that use him, and that's how we got a hold of him initially.
Okay.
And I became highly recommended. So.
I heard more on all this.
I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, absolutely. He's wonderful just to learn from already.
I move.
Drive careful getting home too. I will. When it gets approved, I'll sign this one, and then I can get that to you tomorrow. Anybody have any questions for him before?
No.
I think he's good.
Okay. Oh, thank
he'll
you.
Hang out just a little bit. You can turn it and get to him.
All right.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate y'all giving me the opportunity. I'll work hard for you, I promise.
I'll make the motion. I move that the...
Who made the motion?
I move that the Board of Trustees approve the Municipal Advisory Agreement for Professional Service with Government Capital Securities Corporation designating Jake Lawrence as financial advisor for Klondike ISD effective immediately.
Cody made the motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Justin second. All in favor? None opposed?
There you go.
You're hired.
Welcome aboard. Right. That'll do it. Appreciate it. Thank you all.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. You.
Yeah, and then I'll talk if y'all decide y'all want to do the paying off. You know, that bond will work to get that done for you too. Already. Just it takes another board, your next board meeting or whatever board meeting after that, you got to pass a resolution stating your intent to defeat. So, thank y'all. Nice to meet you. And y'all have a rest of the evening too.
Have a safe trip.
Thank you.
Past two boards since I've been on here.
Okay. We have any budget amendments?
$4 million for the new gym. And we did $8 for this project.
Did you
build
it?
Is
that first?
Five, six,
yes.
One.
Sorry.
Five is insurance.
Oh, yes. Yep.
No,
five is
budget amendments.
Budget amendments.
Okay, well.
Six is insurance.
Eight is budget.
I may have done yours before I sent them all out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go.
We can move around. We need to.
Okay, we'll do whatever.
What do you want to do?
Is it handed out? Or is
you go on
let's
this?
Go to the insurance.
This was mine, but we
well,
didn't
oh,
know.
No,
I don't know. He was passing around. Okay. Maybe they didn't.
Oh.
I'll just go to.
You have the budget amendment page? No, this one right there.
So that's
the short version of it.
Maybe. I know where that came from.
He
handed it out.
Is this to pass around and look, or did you give us all one?
We do have all those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, those were just on Star stuff, and that copier may have stopped again because I was printing on them a while ago. It jammed up. Janae got them, but those were the letter that I have just on top of yours was from TEA recognizing us as an A district, had the star scores attached to it, and then also the CCMR, College Career Military Readiness portion of it was going to be attached to that also, but I'll look for that, and I bet the copier didn't finish all of them.
Here.
And that's all right.
I got mine. I'm good.
We had A's, and I may have sent it in the whole board packet, but I made copies of it too because we did get that letter just recognizing us, and I wanted y'all to see that before we put it onto the we'll put it on the web page. So
yes, top notch.
Okay, that was.
He has the board. I'm sorry, the budget amendment right there. Oh.
Okay, you translate that.
I had insurance like that. This is sent to us from the service center. She sent this in this afternoon on our food service, increasing the $7,900 that's transferred in, $35,000, and increasing fund 35 to $35,000 as well. And then on the general fund, they've made some adjustments, increasing and decreasing to balance it out. On amendments, if y'all want to.
This is for previous year. Time.
This is for 25-26.
Yes. Yeah, but I did send that out to y'all. They just sent us a.
They sent a simplified version.
Simplified
today.
Version. Oh. Sign it today. That way, we didn't have to sign.
Yes.
These legal length size ones.
Yes, it is the simplified version of what I think you have already.
So this is a pretty 26-27 budget.
No, this is 25-26 budget amendment.
That's the one. That's the only one we've got to add. That's what Kenny showed you.
I'll move that we make those amendments as presented.
Thank you.
Hold your horses here. We don't.
Oh.
It's number five on here.
Okay. Well, we've got insurance, dual credit, budget, 26-27 mm-hmm. budget, resolution. Mm-hmm. It's not on here.
That one, I probably did all of that. I had all this done, and then Janae, we got the amendments from them. I added it to y'all's before I sent it out. So the agenda that got posted actually had it, but your notes agenda.
Consideration and action as appropriate. Any budget amendment for the 25-26 budget. And this is 25-26 year.
Budget amendment 25-26.
Okay. And Justin made a motion.
To approve
correct,
as,
is that what I heard?
As to approve as presented or to amend the budget as presented.
I will second it.
Jess second it. All in favor? There's none opposed, Kelly.
They do need to sign. I'm not sure if it's one or both, but yes, we need to have it signed.
Okay. We have insurance adjustment. Yes. To $600 as presented.
And that was to cover the increase for the Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Yes. Blue Cross Blue Shield, the $600 would cover two of the cheapest ones, my bad. Two of the cheapest plans that were offered for us. There was one that was $645, I want to say. And the cheapest one was $588 and then $593. Can't remember the third one.
It was over 600. And then the
645 was the most expensive one.
Oh, we're looking at increasing to 600.
Correct. Yes. Currently, we pay 500.
Yes.
Okay, so it's currently $100 increase.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
We're currently paying 500 per employee, and we're requesting to pay 600.
Okay.
Instead,
and if they want to do that next year, they would
out of pocket
yes. 45.
Anything? Yes.
Okay.
That would be 45. And that's the employee only.
Okay.
Yeah, so any family awesome. Stuff like that is on top of.
It's on top of. Okay. Cool. I didn't bring the plan out, but
my motion.
Yes, made that motion.
I'll second.
Quentin seconded. All in favor? None opposed.
Thank you. They will appreciate that.
Yes. Insurance is the worst.
It is.
So
I know exactly.
Yeah, we're at the dual credit.
See how much Heidi's heart surgeries would cost.
The dual credit is for college tuition for our Howard College dual credit. What we would like to do is cover the first 12 hours, which basically is what applies to the high school transcript. The reason we feel like we need to do that is because right now, parents are paying for it, and we're pretty fortunate. I mean, the majority of the kids do go that route, but I feel like if we're offering dual credit and we're given an opportunity for those kids to earn that, there's some kids that cannot afford to go and cannot afford to do that. We limit it at the 12 hours. There's a lot of kids that are taking anything and everything because it is cheaper to take a dual credit. It's $165 for your three-hour course. If they do that post high school, they're going to pay, $285 or something along those lines. But we want to cover English 1301, English 1302, government, and then one of the two maths that we offer, depending on which route they go. The reason we didn't limit the math to one or the other because some kids want to go do engineering, and that college algebra doesn't apply to that. They need the pre-cal. So those kids can take pre-cal or college algebra. And we would still cover that. That's over the course of a 4-year plan, mostly in their junior and senior year. So,
I think that's a good deal.
So, the other districts, is this usual and customary for some other districts as well?
Yeah. Now, if a kid wants to start early, like sophomore year, and do some things that are going to put them towards their associate's degree and stuff like that, we encourage them to take advantage. But we'll only cover those 12 hours.
Right.
One, that keeps us from being just liable to somebody that wants to
take on
30 hours and do that sort
Cut
of thing.
Boundaries.
And these are
the,
these all of these go to our high school transcript. So
okay,
and replace a high school course.
So we are limiting to only what it will be applied to their transcript.
Yep.
12 hours. Okay.
I move that the board approve the addition of a budget line item to fully cover up to 12 hours of dual credit tuition per eligible student.
Cody made that motion. Kyle seconded. All in favor? None opposed?
That next one was for certifications. These are industry-based certifications that we're doing now through CTE. So our ag program, our IT program, certifications are tied to that. One, it's a huge help to the district. But on this one right here, this will be the really the only year we have to front those charges. But once we get started, then TEA is going to reimburse us annually for up to two certifications. So we could do, a kid could do an entrepreneurship and an ag, and we put those into our PEAM system. Next year, we're going to get refunded for those. So we'll have money coming back to us in the future that goes into that budget to cover these. But for this year, we have to put it in to start that ball rolling.
So this sheet you handed out, it's this $92.85.
Yep, about $10,000. That is about what it will cost us. And that there's a couple of those that like a kid won't earn. We don't have that many kids earning both ag certifications. They're going to do like small animal, or they're going to do livestock production, depending on what grade they're in. Now then, we'll get reimbursed for it, but then next year, they'll probably take the other one if they stay in ag. But yeah, that was kind of a general cost, number of kids that are in programs that we're expecting this year, just so we had an idea of what we were looking at overall.
I think that's great.
And is each year, like, the goal to add different CTE programs, or I don't know, what does that look like as far as, like, the future and growing, or?
The only one that I know we talked about between the counselors would be like the teaching and training. That is a good one that we can in-house work with Howard College a little bit on and get them their educational aid certification.
Yeah, that's cool.
Then they can work. TEA's relaxed that as of this year. Used to, you couldn't do it till their 18th birthday, so sometimes you were chasing down a kid mm-hmm. in summer and whatnot. But they've changed the laws this year that as long as you're a high school student and you pass the three required courses for teaching and training, then we'll do that. But we need to figure out exactly how we're going to staff that. Who's the best person for that? There are a few options.
Awesome.
That that are available. So.
Good. I'm still learning all about CTE. So.
Yeah, a lot of it just has to do with the number of sections that we had right now,
yeah.
and the number of teachers that we
yeah,
had.
Yeah, manpower counts.
And who was capable.
For
yes.
Sure.
If we decided to add something, we would want to see that there would be, you know, 7 to 10 kids going to be involved with that program study, you know, close to annually, to either hire a teacher or we just need to kind of replace what we're doing if mm-hmm. we don't think it's working.
Cool. That sounds awesome. Good.
I'll make that motion. Where is it at?
Seven.
I move that the board approve budget item to cover Texas Education Agency approved industry-based certification for students provided. They align with the approved Klondike ISD program of study.
Okay, well, Justin made
I'll
that
second
motion.
That.
Kyle seconded it. All in favor? None opposed?
The next one is the new budget for the 26-27 school year. That's been set a lot by Janae and mm-hmm. Region 17 over the last, it's the two-tone one?
The yes. blue and yellow one.
Region Center helped us go through that process a little bit. Like talking with Justin earlier today, there's only one that had a big increase in it. We think that is the two Suburbans, right,
mm-hmm.
that
yeah,
we're
going to
add
we'll
in,
that
in,
mm-hmm.
into that. And then there's one more thing that might have been involved with that, too. But
add the FFA going to Nationals, we knew they would be traveling this year, so we increased it for that as well. Because they qualified last year for that.
The rest of them, there's some light increases, but most of them are pretty consistent.
Mm-hmm.
I
need my magnifying glass.
Yeah.
I know. Well, hats off to Janae.
Yeah. No, the service center did
thank
this.
You, Janae.
Well,
thank you, though.
That is one of the big benefits that service
yes, center. They do a lot for us.
I make a motion that we approve 2026 budget.
Kelly made the motion.
Quentin
seconded it. All in favor? None opposed.
On this next one, it is the tax resolution. So I've got one here that's the most appropriate reading of it. So whoever, if we decide to approve it, whoever does, that highlighted section is the correct verbiage. But basically, it is our maintenance and operation. It is our INS tax rate. We have the maximum compressed tax rate, the gold and copper pennies, and then the INS rate. So that total was a 70.776200 tax rate.
Okay, so M&O is 0.724 and INS is 0.0522?
Yes, and that's no change across either one of them for right now.
Got to read all that?
That motion they said, that's
the motion. That's a paragraph. All right. Well, I move that a proposed rate to pay debt service of 0.0522 per $100 of taxable value be approved. This rate exceeds the district's debt service rate determined under Texas Education Code Section 44.004 C5AIIB of 0.0264 by 0.0258. The excess revenue collected from the proposed rate will be used for defease debt early.
Okay. Could you repeat that, please?
No. I should have listened.
Who made the motion?
Jess. You got to be kidding me.
All in favor of adopting the tax rates? None opposed.
Any questions before y'all? Motion number 10, anything?
Can you go over that?
Yeah, actually I do. y'all had a copy of the proposed dates coming up. I mean, the most important one is the next one. We need to get September locked in. These only September and October right now are moved. September was adjusted because it was initially supposed to be on Labor Day. So we moved it off of Labor Day. And then I was going to be out for that first-time Superintendent's Academy the 9th through the 11th. So we moved it to Monday the 14th. Then the October one was on Columbus Day. That bumped some games to Tuesday night. I think there was a bunch of games on Thursday, had some things going on. So we went ahead and bumped that to the following Monday as well. The rest of them are basically the first Monday after the first Tuesday. They're set in there. But we don't have to approve this or anything. Y'all just take a look at it. If there's any of those if there's any of those dates that don't work for you, if it's just one or two of you, that's okay. But if I get, you know, if y'all say, yeah, that one in May, I'm going to be gone, and I get four of those, then we're going to move it and reschedule it. Otherwise, we'll put this out there for those meeting dates. And y'all can think about that for the next few days. That's not a rush.
I sure don't know if I'm going to be able to make it on August 9th next year.
That's right. Planning ahead. That's all I like that.
I won't be here on September 14th, but...
Okay. Okay, that's next one. What do y'all? Anybody else that does have a problem with September?
No,
there is
a possible February
volleyball game that night for junior high, but just an FYI.
Was it a home game? Is that
no,
right?
It was at Loop.
Oh, at Loop. Okay. Mm-hmm. Who was that impact?
Junior high volleyball.
Junior high volleyball. My granddaughter, but I can
guess. My granddaughter. Well,
your granddaughter.
But I missed her tonight,
too. I did, too.
So.
I did, too. Apparently, I did not win. Sorry. Okay.
Any other discussion? Anything we need to... If we're done, then I'll need a motion and a second. We'll adjourn
this
meeting.
I'll move a special call meeting for the Klondike ISD Board of Trustees to adjourn.
It's all normal now.
Okay, Cody, motion. Kyle, second. It all in favor of adjourning this meeting. This meeting is adjourned.
Sir.
That was my gavel.
That's funny.
Good job. Hey,